Hello and welcome to the Utah Puck Report. I'm your host, Jay Stevens. Thanks so much for, downloading us, tuning us in today. Today, cool episode, man. We're gonna learn what it takes to be an equipment manager in the ECHL and some other places. We have the Utah Grizzlies equipment manager, Chris Shornack, with us. Chris, how are you?
Doing great. How about you, Jay?
I'm good, man. Every day is a good day as long as you're alive, right?
Exactly.
All right, so Chris, where are you today?
I'm currently in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in the equipment room here in the locker room. We have a game tonight. It's 4:06 our time, it's 4:06 Tulsa time, so
okay.
We're getting ready for the guys to get here and just waiting for the game to start.
Oh, wow. And you guys played last night too, right?
Yeah, really weird. We're kind of on an 11-day road trip right now, so we played two in Kansas City, travel day, practice Monday, game Tuesday, Wednesday here in Tulsa, travel day tomorrow, and then games Friday and Saturday in Wichita, and then fly back Super Bowl Sunday. So we're in the midst of a long one here.
Oh, man, that sounds long. I did notice that you guys won last night, though.
Yeah, 2-1. Actually, Josh Anderson got his first pro goal and game winner, so that was exciting to have him finally score.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it. It's going to get the GW.
Yeah.
So, Chris, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you originally from?
I'm from Warren, Michigan. It's probably about 20 minutes outside of Detroit. I grew up there. Didn't really move at all. I went to high school at Cousineau, which is also in Warren. And then went to college at Adrian College. Played ECHA there. And that's pretty much it. And then ended up moving to a few states after that.
Well, where is Adrian College?
Adrian College is about 45 minutes from Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's actually in Adrian, Michigan, 45, 50 minutes from Toledo. It's kind of right on the end there of the state.
Okay. Yeah, I knew I had heard of it when I was playing ACHA, but I didn't know where it was. And then, when I was pulling up stats, Adrian College keeps popping up to the top. I think they're undefeated this year, their ACHA D1 team.
Yeah, I believe their ACHA D1 team won national championship last year, so that was pretty cool. The D3 team had success.
And you picked up a couple national titles team when you were there, right?
Yeah, I did. I did. It was I got a very fortunate freshman, sophomore, junior year to win. So,
wow.
Not very often does that happen.
My freshman year,
to be a part of that.
My freshman year at Weber went a little bit different. We didn't really win any games, but same thing, I guess. We both played hockey. So.
Yeah, just see. Yeah, exactly.
No, I think we won a couple games, but it was. I remember I transferred here. I was playing junior college in North Dakota, and then I transferred to Weber. It was the first year they were going to have ACHA here, and our first game, I gave up like 114 or 104 shots, and I don't think we even had 14 shots for us. So, yeah, a little different than your experience there at Adrian, but that sure sounds nice for you.
Yeah, my freshman year, I was just a team guy. I was injured my freshman year, so you had more shots than me that year for sure.
All right, so you go to Adrian College, you get a degree. What's your degree in?
It's business with a sports management focus, so like business management, and then you can take a few extra classes and get like a focus or minor, I believe it was, in sports management. So it actually got introduced right before, like they announced it right before you had to commit to
declare.
One.
Yeah, declare.
So I was, So I was kind of one of the first classes to have the opportunity to even take it. So I was kind of might as well.
Oh, cool. So how do you go from Adrian College to becoming an equipment manager? And I know Utah's not where you started. You had a few different places that you started. When did you decide that was something you were going to do? How'd that come about?
You know what? It was when I was really young, Jay. It was 2003, 2004, 2004, 2005. There is a team called the Motor City Mechanics in the United Hockey League. And I believe that turned into the IHL.
Okay.
Which then turned into the ECHL, if I'm not, it all kind of combined. They played out of the local rink in Michigan, out of Fraser, Michigan, where I played. And I just remember one game, kind of going up to the tunnel, and asking if I could help. And they said, yeah, sure, come on down. And I filled bottles for a couple games, and then ended up, we went to every game anyway, so I ended up kind of helping out, you know. Friday, my parents would take me after school, and then, you know, Saturdays, I was usually at the rink playing or at practice, so I just go over to the room after and start helping out, and it just kind of snowballed, and I kind of fell in love with it, you know, just being a part of it. And then as I got older, I knew I wasn't going to be going anywhere with it. So, like, you know how ECHA works, like, there's no real equipment guy or anything like that. So I was always in charge of the skates and would help out with laundry and, you know, just kind of work at the rink for student hours and be doing those jobs. And it kind of snowballed. And in the off seasons, right, like be playing hockey, then off seasons, I would work in baseball to kind of stay, to kind of get my feet wet. So I worked for the Washington Wild Things, a frontier league. Like, they're lower than like A ball. It's like,
just rookie league,
something
like
that? I don't
know
what you'd call it. Maybe, like, comparable to the SP or, like, something like that.
Okay.
And I worked there for a summer and then went from there back to school and then ended up working for the NCAA team at Adrian when I graduated. I actually worked for the Detroit Tigers for spring training before that. And then from there, I went right in back into hockey after I worked baseball. I was graduated, didn't play anymore, so I was like, time to take on hockey full time.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I think most hockey players look for a way to stay involved, right? And you're definitely involved now. So how old were you when you started volunteering at the home rink? You said 2003, but I'm not sure how old you are.
Yeah, I'm 26 or 25 now. So I was like, what, 12?
Yeah, wow.
Less than that. I'm not a math guy. If you ask Tim and Snatch, they'll back me up. I'm not a numbers guy.
All right, so...
No, I was pretty young, though. I was probably playing Pee Wee.
Oh.
So, would have been, like, 10, 11.
And that seemed to be the way it was in most of those. Like, we had the Golden Eagles here, and some kids that I was growing up with were the Rink Rats or whatever, and they ended up working for the Utah Grizzlies and setting up the nets and helping fold towels or doing all that stuff, too. And they're the same thing, 13, 14 years old, and basically were just free labor for the team.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, we have that, you know, I hate to say it like that, but we have those helpers here in Utah now that just love kind of being a part of it. And, I mean, that's just kind of how it starts. And even if I wouldn't have gotten into it, like, you learn so much just being around the room and around these athletes, and it's a different perspective. Like, yeah, you're there knowing, like, you're going to have a job tomorrow, but you know how it is in pro. Like, you never know what's going to happen, who's getting called up, sent down,
right,
traded. So you kind of have an appreciation to be in there and watching these guys every day is kind of a tryout for them in a sense.
Yeah. And honestly, the same thing can kind of be said for you. I mean, yeah, you know, you're going to have a job here and they're not, you know, even when coaches get fired, they don't usually take out the equipment staff, but we've noticed here in Utah, like the guy you replaced got pulled up to the A. So the road's still there for you. Is that something you're hoping for? Do you have NHL aspirations as an equipment manager?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, you always want to, you know, work hard every day, you know, as much as a player does. And I think as much as our staff, as a coaching staff and Brian, our medical guy, I think all of us, you know, at some point want to get to the next level or have the opportunity to. And you know, as cliche as it might sound, like, we're still chasing the dream, too, of making, you know, the NHL, American League even. Like, so very fortunate, though, with that being said, to be, you know, in Utah, considering, you know, it is ECHL and you know how it is. Some teams are ran, you know, better than others, and I'd like to think we're one of those top-tier teams, and, you know, location-wise, and my girlfriend's family's from Utah, so it's nice to have kind of a second family here, and just very comfortable being here and having stuff to do.
Where were you,
some of the places we go.
Where were you at before you came to Utah?
I was in Amarillo, Texas.
Is that the SP?
No, that's the North American League, so junior
hockey.
Oh,
okay, all right, all right. I remember they used to have, Amarillo used to be in, it wasn't the SP, I think, what, it used to be something.
The Central League, it was the Gorillas.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep.
All right, and were you the head guy there?
Yeah, I was, yeah, I went, so when I was at Adrian, the head coach there is Adam Krug, Torrey's brother, Boston.
Yeah.
So it was kind of nice to get him and able to kind of, you know, pick brains with connections. He would help me kind of obtain. And from there, one of the former assistant coaches when Adam played there was the coach in Amarillo and their equipment guy, you know, I think he'd left his wife kind of made him leave the job to spend more time or something like that. And it was a last minute, like, hey, we need a guy. And it just kind of worked out that way. So
yeah.
At that point I was like, whoever's offering me a job, you know, want to yeah, you know, at least sure. try to take a jump or do something.
So how long were you there?
Just 1 year.
Okay. How do you get the gig in Utah? Who calls you? What was the connection there?
So when I was at Adrian working, I reached out to every ECHL. So like towards the end of the season, let's say March, April, I reached out to every ECHL and American League equipment manager. In some way, I tried to email, you know, usually it's first initial last name at, you know,
right.
Colorado Eagles type thing, right? So reached out to everybody. And I got three responses back, and one of them was from a former head in San Diego. He's now an assistant with Anaheim, Matt Brayfield, and he responded back, and it was one of those we kind of kept in touch over the next, you know, few years as everything was going on, you know, asking him questions, picking his brain. He had kind of the same route, like he started in North American League at 18, you know, where he's from, and it just kind of, it was similar kind of grind. No, I wouldn't say grind. He grinded out a little longer than me, but it was nice to be able to ask him questions. And when we were out of playoffs in Amarillo, I just said, hey, we're out. Like, if you want some help, like, you know, I'm not doing anything. Would love to come down, you know, not asking for anything, just a place to stay. And he said, sure, can you be here, you know, tomorrow? So I drove 16 straight hours from Texas to San Diego, got in. And then, actually, just ironically enough, stayed with the assistant in San Diego, which was Larry, Ryan Tall.
Yeah.
And worked three regular season games with them, you know, helping them out, folding towels. And at that time, you know, at the end of the year, they bring up the guys, right, the Black Aces. So there's probably like 40 guys there in the locker room. We had two locker rooms going. So it was nice to help out and had a decent amount of work. And then worked the first round of playoffs with them. And at that time, Utah was affiliated with Anaheim, and they had gotten knocked out. So Tim, Brandon, the head coach, came down, and we kind of, you know, got introduced to each other and, you know, talked a bit, and one thing led to another, and talked in the summer, and I ended up taking over as the head guy here. So wow. Kind of a long story, but...
that's a cool story, though, because that's one of those things where you... I mean, that's a gamble that a lot of people won't take, or, you know, a sacrifice... to drive 16 hours to go help out and not be paid for. And that's the thing that I think a lot of people miss these days is that we have a ton here at the radio station where we have entry-level positions. And we have stuff where we expect people to come in and work hard. Josh, the producer, and I were talking about this just before we went on the air. We want guys to work hard and prove themselves, and then they get rewarded by getting the job, right? So a lot of times it's volunteer, but a lot of people won't take that risk anymore. They won't, you know, they don't seem to want it bad enough or whatever the reasons are, but it's cool to hear that paid off for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I was very fortunate. Like, obviously, I like to think I worked hard for it, but at the end of the day too, right place, right time. And at the end of the day too, like I look at myself now and, you know, I'm learning the business and learning people in it and, you know, to think like, all right, like if I was in that spot, would I take a chance? And sometimes I'm like, not sure if I would. So it's pretty cool. Like just a guy that I never really even met in person, talked on the phone to, you know, a dozen times in Matt when he was in San Diego. Like it was pretty cool that he just, you know, had this kid come take a chance. And, you know, luckily it paid off and we got along well. We still talk, keep in contact.
Wow.
So just fortunate there. And then in the same hand too, like Tim, this kid, you know, gave a kid, you know, from junior hockey with 1 year experience, 2 year experience, a chance, and it worked out. So very fortunate too for those guys and Utah in general to give me the opportunity and everything like that. So I think it all kind of, it's just kind of, I guess, at the end of the day, people trust in, you know, who they're hiring.
Yeah. And now you have connections with the Anaheim Ducks system, and now you have connections with the Colorado Avalanche being moved this year. Right. So that's cool. Like
yeah.
You're just networking the whole time.
Yeah, you try to, and you know, it's hopefully the right things happen, and, you know, it's just kind of one of those things, I think, for us, too, like we said, staff, players, everybody, every day is kind of a tryout. You never know who's watching. So
right. Well,
you try not to have too many off days, or if you do, try to mask it a bit.
Yeah. Well, your work speaks for itself, and I think that's how, you know, that's how you'll get noticed. And I've noticed a huge, like, when you came in as a top-notch guy. Like, I didn't see any gaps in the way you treated the players or the way the equipment was managed. You seemed to already be really dialed in. So that was pretty impressive from my vision, you know, as the once a month guy or twice a month guy. Because I've seen other equipment managers drop the ball. I've gotten in there and guys complain about stuff, or, you know, sometimes when I get the call, I just played men's league the night before and I got a bunch of dings in my skates, and we've had equipment guys that don't have time because they haven't managed their time appropriately or whatever to fix my skate. So I still got to go out there and try to keep up with all these young guys with, you know, no inside edge or whatever. And I need every advantage I can get.
I attribute a lot to that, you know, too, just real quick, to Tim. Tim does a great job with that, kind of showing me the ropes. And in San Diego, too, like when I went there, like they are top-notch how they run things at the American Hockey level, league level. So it was just kind of, you go there and you see how it's ran there, and, you know, little tricks of, you know, setting the locker room up with the players tape at their stall, like little things like that, the guys I think appreciate. We take tricks and steal them, and I'm very fortunate to have had those kind of, you know, mentors, not mentors, but kind of those guidelines.
Yeah, people with good examples. So tell me, what is a typical day like for you? I mean, that's, I kind of know, because even when I'm not playing, I'll call you and I'll be like, hey, I got something messed up with my gear or whatever. What time will you be at the rink? And you're like, I'll be there at 6:30. So I don't think a lot of people understand that the players aren't on the ice till 10 on a non-game day. So tell me a normal day in the life on a game day and a normal day in the life on a non-game day.
Normal day practice. Usually try to get to the rink, you know, no later than 7:15. Our assistant coach and I, you know, he hits it more than I do, but we try to get a workout in, a bike ride, something to kind of sweat in the morning. So 7:15, get in there. That's pending, like, you know, we haven't had a call up where I have to get in early. Like, that's just kind of a normal day. So get in there, do a workout, whatever. And then we have a staff meeting every morning at 8 a.m. So it's Tim, our head coach, Ryan, our assistant, medical guy, Brian, myself, and Tyson, our radio guy. And we just kind of, sometimes it lasts a minute, sometimes it lasts 10. It's just making sure everybody's on the same page, what our lines are going to be that day, what player appearances, who are going, injury updates, all that kind of, you know, things to keep everybody on the same page. And then after that, you go back to the room, and just depending on what you did, you know, maybe do a couple minor repairs that you just saved to kind of eat the clock in the morning. And then you're setting up the bench, coaches board, stuff like that, getting the pucks ready. There's always socks to sew, so if there's dead time, we're sewing socks. So for people who don't know, like if there's a skate hole in a sock, we sew that up. So there's no holes, you don't see a shin guard, stuff like that. Guys start coming in, usually like Carzy and Anderson. Josh Anderson are usually the first couple guys there, you know, and they'll come in around 8:45, 9 o'clock. Usually, traditionally, Carzy and I play best of three of ping pong, which he kicks my tush every time, but it's just kind of fun to do. And then we're just kind of waiting and making sure laundry's going. My assistant Mason does an unbelievable job helping out.
Yeah, he's a hard worker. So good kid.
Yeah, he's great, and he's been there forever. I've been a stick boy. He's kind of taken more of a responsibility role the last couple of years. So guys get out at 10. I usually don't watch much of practice, but we'll go back in the room, you know, clean up the room a bit, you know, collect the jersey hangers, rearrange stalls, shirts on the ground, stuff like that. And after they get off, it's, you know, a bunch of laundry to do and check skates and sharpen or do repairs. And then usually out on a practice day, 3:30, 4:30. And then you're kind of home for the night. Obviously, all depends.
Yeah. That's a full day, man.
Yeah.
And for the players, I mean, a player walks in at 8:30, whatever, stretches, gets on the ice, gets off the ice, grabs a shower and leaves. It's, or, you know, grabs a workout or whatever too, but it's.
Yeah.
So for all the people that don't see, I mean, there's so much work that goes on that maybe even the players don't see, and the fans definitely don't know that you're working that hard all the time.
What's... Yeah, we try to do, like we talked about earlier, like I try to take as many things as other people as possible. Like, I might be stubborn on how I do stuff, but I definitely like to kind of creep on Twitter and you know, talk to guys on why they do what they do.
Yeah, I remember you made me stop folding towels.
Try to kind of use that. What's that?
You made me stop folding towels because I wasn't folding them in the direction you wanted. I was just trying to help.
Well, the story behind that is, Jay, when I worked for the Tigers, the equipment guy there was so strict that if we didn't fold towels the right way or they weren't neat enough, he'd go up to the towel rack and push the towel stack on the ground and make us refold them.
Oh, wow.
So now it's like, yeah, now I'm like, you know, we got to do it the right way. My OCD kicks in.
It's a little stricter in your locker room than it is at the firehouse, I'll tell you that. We're just happy somebody folds towels. We don't care what's, you know, as long as they're put away. One of the things I've always found interesting is, all right, you're in Tulsa right now. And
yeah.
Have any players been pulled up or reassigned to you since you've been on the road?
Yeah, actually, we had Davis go up. What was it? The second game night. It would have been Saturday night in Kansas City. Or was it Friday night? Friday night he went up. Like, we found out, you know, later on in the night. So we kind of have to, like, it kind of sucks when that happens because you got to call in the other equipment guy to let you back into the rink. And generally at that time, laundry's going. So you got to make him stop the washer or to get his other laundry bag out. But yeah, it happens on the road. Like, I have a travel bag that's dedicated to all, like, American League guys. So it's because when guys come from Colorado, they have, like, a Colorado Avalanche laundry bag, toiletry bag, skate guards. So I swap everything into Grizzlies, and then I carry all that stuff in a separate bag, you know, with us. So, you know, if there is to be a call-up,
I
transfer it all back over.
How many extra sets of, like, gloves and jerseys and helmets and stuff do you have to carry on a road trip?
Well, we carry, like, for pregame skate, we wear black and white, D in black, forwards in white. And then, like, for example, Monday we had just a normal practice, so you got to carry three lines or power play jerseys, just kind of depending what Tim wants to do, Tim and Snatch want to do. So I carry, like, an extra gear bag, I call it. It's a big goalie bag, and it's got one of each size pants, one of each helmet, one of each size gloves, shin guards, elbow pads, shoulder pads. So we actually had an incident in... Or was it Wichita this year, where a guy's bag got rerouted to El Paso. So we showed up for a game, you know, with no gear. So, you know, luckily we had what we needed. And other than he just had to borrow somebody's backup skates. And I had all the gear here, luckily. And it kind of worked out well that way. But you kind of, 90% of the time, you don't need what you bring. But that 10% you do, it's important.
Yeah, it's hugely important. And I can't imagine having to play a professional game in somebody else's skates. Like,
yeah, he did it, and it's kind of one of those things too. Like the odd time, like we had a couple guys last year would fly in from San Diego, or even this year Colorado, and they show up right at, you know, 4:45, 5 o'clock. They've been flying all day or waiting around, kind of thing. And you know, sometimes they have good games then. It's just kind of one of those things where that's kind of the point of being a pro. Like, just because you have bad gear on doesn't, or not your own skates, doesn't mean you can turn a puck over, right? So,
right.
I think guys kind of realize that and
yeah, but still, I mean,
down a little more.
So 2 years ago when I got put in the game, this is just one of those weird things, right? And I know you'll appreciate how particular goalies are about their equipment. And I got put in the game, I gave up a rebound, and one of our defensemen swatted the rebound out of the air, but at the same time smacked the side of my mask, and it broke the screw off that holds my chin strap. So, you know, so you have the other chin strap, and Larry was the equipment manager, and I kept going. He thought I was just trying to kill time. I'm like, I need another screw, because now I had to move the screw from the back to the front, or, you know, the snap for my chin strap. So now it's holding my mask just a little bit crooked. And it's just, you know, it's not a big deal, but you're used to your equipment feeling a certain way and sitting on your body a certain way. And then here I am. We were down 5-on-3, too. We had 2 men in the penalty box. And I'm trying to be 43 years old, kill a 5-on-3 penalty, and my mask is crooked. So yeah. It's just an irritant. Like, yeah, it's maybe it affected my game. It's hard to tell as slow as I move or whatever. But
I don't know. If I remember correctly, it was a good outcome. So I don't know how much it affected your game.
Yeah, it was a good outcome. I think just like I said, I was slow enough that guys thought I'd be somewhere else, and they just hit me with pucks. But it was just
whatever works, but...
I'll never forget that. I'll never forget. And so I think that every time I hear about a guy having to wear somebody else's stuff. I also got the opportunity to do an e-bug in a day skate with the Columbus Blue Jackets. And they were in Colorado, and I was an equipment rep at the time. And they're like, hey, you want to skate with us tomorrow? And I'm like, yeah, I don't have my gear. And they're like, get it here, or you can just use I'm trying to remember who the other goalie was. The goalie had the flu, and they're like, you can just use his gear. And I'm like, no, there's no way. There is no way I'm going on the ice in an NHL practice with Sergei Fedorov and not wearing, you know, not wearing the right gear.
Yeah.
So it's cool though. I got my wife flew out there, and they set me up with all, like, I had my equipment, but they set me and my wife up with, I mean, head to toe tracksuit, hoodies, the little Reebok travel bags, everything. I mean, they took such good care of me to skate
awesome.
1 hour. I don't even think it was an hour long.
Yeah,
but it was pretty cool.
That's
awesome. I mean, the stuff you equipment guys have to put up with. So I've given you two weird examples of things that have happened to me just with equipment. Tell me some.
Yeah.
Tell me, you've had to have some crazy stories or some neurotic goalies, or something. Tell me some crazy stories about being an equipment guy.
Oh, I don't know. I like to keep those tight, to be honest with you. I'll give you one. It was weird. I had we had Peter Sivak here last year, and he was a very particular guy, and he came up to me and asked. Maybe this is more common, but I'd never heard of it, and asked for another stick. To make a water stick. Have you heard of this?
No.
So in the summers,
oh,
he would
train with? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he would put water, tap water, in the shaft of his stick so it would be weighted.
Yeah.
And he'd stick handle and shoot and do all that stuff with that. So I was I'm still green, you know, only a few years in, but I'd never heard of that. And I tell guys the story and they just laugh. And
I hear it all the time as a prick.
It either.
Like my summer camp, every year somebody does that to somebody else. And we've had, honestly, we had one kid get so mad he almost quit, and the mom calls me about people hazing him because they put water in his stick. But I do remember, and I'm trying to remember the player, that they put water in his stick, and he's like, you know what, this is actually kind of cool. And he kept it in there, and he used it during practice. And he was doing drills with Greg Lieb and Ryan Kanasiewicz, stick handling drills.
Yeah.
He's like, I feel... He's like, I like it because it's weighted. So I didn't know it was actually a thing. I thought it was an accident that happened because of a prank.
No. He would ask for it specifically, and he said all summer he used it. And then the last few weeks of the summer, he said he went to a regular stick, and the first like few shots were going out of the arena.
Wow.
Because, it's so much lighter, right? But he would use it at the beginning of practice for flow drills or just stick handle, and it was just kind of one of those things. I was like, I never... Ever seen that before, but it worked for him.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. You'd think you'd see that more, because I remember they used to have those little weights that you'd put on your sticks.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of little things. Like, I love that you guys with the Grizzlies have those edge savers that you put on the nets. Those were things that were a personal preference for a long time, and it seems like, there's tons of trainer stuff available online. I'm surprised you don't get hit up with it all the time.
Yeah, we usually, like, with the organization we're in, it's called PHATS and STEM, which is like pro, and now they're letting junior and college guys into it, but it's like an equipment manager's, like,
a
club or whatever. We paid the dues to be in it, and you go to these conferences and they have your email, so we get emails up and down, and a lot of times, like, Kevin Carr and I were talking about it the other day. Like, why weren't we the ones to invent, like, as goalies, a piece of rubber that goes on the bottom of the post to save, our blades, stuff like that, or whoever invented the strap on the back of the net for the water bottle. Like, there's little things like that, so the water bottle's on top of the net.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's
so
just,
every time
you
get sniped,
there's
you
all
need
these
a new
little
water
things
bottle.
That we find, like, they make, like, special, like, three-prong, like, practice pegs now, so when they're not drilled, you can use them and they hold better. So it's just like, why didn't we think of that?
Yeah, that's the same guy too. That's that same guy out of Michigan. defender. I'm forgetting his name.
We have our piranha peg, they're called.
Okay. And those are out of Michigan, too. Yeah. But do you know who I'm talking about? Out of Michigan, he runs Bandit Goalie School.
And he's, he might have. Is it Joe Messina?
Yeah, Joe Messina. He's the one that's been selling those. Yeah. He's the one that came up with the edge savers, and then he had those three-prong moorings for the nets. Yeah. He sells all that stuff. And yeah, he's, you know, it's like back in the movie Cocktail when Tom Cruise was trying to find his million-dollar idea that was because somebody made an umbrella to put in a cocktail, and that was their million-dollar idea, right?
Exactly.
Well, that's cool, man. So you guys are on a road trip. You finish out the rest of the season. What do you do during the off season?
Oh, geez. I try to be away from hockey as much as possible. Like, you know, you always hope for a short off season, you know, because that means you're going deep. But we have the PHAT STEM, like I was talking about, those meetings where all the reps are at. That's a week long, and that's like end of June. So.
Yeah, and that's usually in Tampa Bay or Miami or Phoenix, somewhere nice.
Yeah, they just like signed a bunch of your deals. So we alternate between like San Antonio, Arizona, and I want to say the other one's Florida for the next, you know, bunch of years. So, because it's gotten so big, they have to have it like at one of those like Marriott conference center, like where they have all the rooms and stuff. So,
yeah, I used to present it
limited to where
I presented it, I think, for like 10 years. I loved it. That was such a great time.
Yeah.
And then I was always a rival with Bauer, but I always tried to get in the Bauer rooms and all the Bauer-sponsored stuff because, you know, they had all the good times.
Oh, yeah.
Well, cool, man. It's great to hear your story and get to hear, you know, kind of get to know you and kind of behind the scenes of what keeps the Utah Grizzlies running. That's definitely you, and we appreciate you taking time to be with us. And we're hoping.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, these are the stories. Stuff like this is, you're kind of the glue for a professional hockey team, and it's a lot of stuff that people just overlook or think magically happens. And man, I know it's a ton of hours for you every week, and it's a lot of work. And I love that you're meticulous. I love that it takes, you know, that you stop me from folding towels because I folded them to the left instead of to the right. But it's good times, man. I really appreciate you being out here. For our listeners, if there's more stuff you want to hear from Chris or you have more questions, just feel free to hit us up on the Facebook page. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, it's super simple. All you got to do is text the word puck to 57500. It's free. It's so free that we don't even have sponsors. That's how free everything is. It's on iTunes. It's on Google Play. Of course, get the KSL Sports app on your phone, and you can download all our sports podcasts right there. We have tons of them. We have football, basketball. I think we have like five football ones. I think they're all hosted by Scott Mitchell, but I don't know. Anyway, Chris, you're an awesome equipment manager. Good luck to you and the Utah Grizzlies this year.
Thanks, Jay. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And also thank you for all you do here for Utah hockey. It's appreciated.
I appreciate that. All right, everybody, that's it. That's the Utah Puck Report.